to Spark Your Fire podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
I'm on the spot once again. Welcome everyone to the show, Spark Your Fire. Jazz is doing the opening for a change because David has put me on the spot. I am not that good at opening. David, normally, what else do you normally say in the opening, mate, that I haven't covered? By the way, please welcome our wonderful co-host on the show, David. I am nowhere as good as him when it comes to opening, but as said, he's put me on the spot. David, how are you, my friend?
Mate, I reckon you're doing quite well. So, you know, don't put yourself down on that basis. It's just that when you do it a lot more, like, for example, if you put me on a spot for the ending, I would struggle as well. So, likewise. But it'll be good to share a lot.
I am going to put you on the spot.
Okay, all right, well, let's try it.
Anyways, what's happening in Sydney, mate? Tell us a little bit.
It's bushfire season, unfortunately. You know, it's been quite a bit of a disastrous week so far. We're talking about mid-November at the moment. There's been a lot of very hot days and very windy days, and some of the New South Wales rural areas currently are still out of control in terms of the fire hazards. So it's a total fire ban. I'm not sure about Victoria. I think, is it around the same?
No, Victoria, actually, the weather has been not too bad. So yeah. How bad is the fire?
Oh, look, I think there's various places in terms of I think there were about up to 10 people that got killed, mostly elderly people to that extent. And I mean, I haven't followed it as close as I should as well, but it was even burning closely to where I was living around Hornsby. I think towards earlier last week, employees were actually encouraged to go back home early just to make sure that they got all the things planned out in the worst scenario. So, yeah, it is difficult for New South Wales, I guess, for the weather as well, because one of those things that you can't control. It's not really the greatest news, but I hope everyone, all the listeners, are definitely safe and keeping out of the fire weather. Total fire ban, just remember that. I think you need to be mindful about what you do in your own backyard in terms of barbecue as well. So definitely read it up.
Yeah. Be safe, everyone.
Especially, we haven't even gone into summer yet at this point. You know, it's only November. I mean, there's most of the days has been quite lovely around Sydney, but there are a few days which has gone up to about 37 degrees, and plus it's a very windy condition as well. So as you can imagine, you know, any kind of fire would just spread like a wildfire.
Yeah. So what's on the agenda today, mate?
We had, we talked about Arjun's deal analysis, and I thought, you haven't shared one of your investment journey for a while. So I thought, how about if we get you to share one of your investment properties today in terms of an investment journey, where did you buy, why did you buy it, and how long you kept it? It's a bit like a rear mirror view, to say you've had it for a while, just so that, obviously, for our listeners who's looking to purchase at the moment, they can benefit from the experience that you have in purchasing this property. Sounds fair?
Yeah, no, that's fine. We can discuss the one of the properties that I actually purchased in Adelaide 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I think it's a little bit more relevant as well to the current market to some extent, because the other ones, some of them were purchased probably 10 years, 9 years ago, so they are less relevant. This one is one of the more recent purchases, so we can definitely dig into that one if you want.
Is this the last purchase?
This was the second last purchase.
Second last. Okay. Which one's the last?
The last one was in Queensland.
Yeah. Well, let's do a deep dive today on this Adelaide property then, for a bit of change, because we normally talked about a lot of New South Wales, Sydney properties, Melbourne properties, Brisbane properties. But we haven't touched on Adelaide properties as much. And I know we've had David Tregar, DT, from Adelaide previously on the show to be able to share some Adelaide news. So I thought, you know, this is an actual practical example of someone who bought in Adelaide 2 years ago and now looking at how it has performed today. Alrighty, so whereabouts is in Adelaide, mate?
So the property itself is located in Christie's Beach. It's walking distance to the water, so that to the beach, probably 200 meters, maybe 300 meters from the beach kind of thing.
How far is that from Adelaide City CBD area?
So from the CBD, it will be roughly about 30 to 35 kind of thing.
30 to 35 K. And is it, what direction is it from Adelaide? Is it south?
It's south.
Okay. Yep. Self. So 30 to 35 K, we're probably looking at a, like more like an outer ring type of purchase. What was the purchase price that you purchased 2 years ago?
So the purchase price at the time when I bought it, I think we ended up negotiating to, it was 310 or 315. I don't exactly remember, but it was 310 or 315.
Sure. Okay. And what was the advertised price at that time? Because you said it negotiated.
So the advertised price was about 325, 330, I think.
That's a good discount. What technique did you use to be able to negotiate that?
I didn't have to put that much effort into getting it discounted. There were two things that were in my favor. One, the property was already under contract and the contract didn't go through.
Okay.
Because of finance, I think it was. And the other reason was that the building and pest inspection report came, and there was honestly not much found in the report, but it's just used more as a negotiation tool. So there were a little bit of things which was under, we're talking here about $100,000 of money to be spent on it.
Yep.
And we just ended up negotiating another 3-4K using the report essentially.
Right. Okay. So basically, because the contract crashed previously due to finance, therefore the seller was very keen to sell.
Yeah.
You got that information from the agent, and you therefore pitched in a lower advertised price in that case. And then upon the BMP completion, then you used building and pest report, even though the building and pest report didn't come back with any major issues, you were still able to shed off another 3,000 or 4,000 off it. Is that correct?
Correct. Spot on. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. No, that's good.
The property was already renovated in this case, mm-hmm. so there was hardly any work required. It was It was pretty much in mint condition, if I say.
Okay.
And from the photos, I could tell that, but photos can
be deceiving.
Exactly, can be very deceiving. So flew up to Adelaide, did a drive around in the town, looked at a few of the other properties in the area. And with this particular one, as said, the photos in this case were pretty accurate. There was absolute work required at all. Property was renovated easily. I checked with a couple of agents in the area to see what the property will rent. And that all came to my favor as well to some extent. With the rent, the rent yield that it was getting at the time was about, I think, 5.5% gross.
Okay.
Or actually it was 6% gross, something like that.
6%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was pretty good considering what the property had to offer. But that wasn't the main reason of buying the property itself. That was one of the reasons to consider the property, that one, there's no work required to this property, which means I don't have to spend any money except signing the contract and going through the settlement process. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it became pretty clear that renting the property won't be an issue, purely because it's so close to the water and it's in such a great condition. It had a massive pergola deck in the backyard with plenty of open space. And so those
is
things.
Is it water view from the property?
Actually, it's a good point that you raise. If you're standing on the deck, you can see the water.
Ah, there you go. Because it's only 250 meters from the water, right?
Exactly.
So from direct distance perspective, you may be able to see a glimpse of the water.
Yeah, you can see a glimpse of the water.
Okay, good.
And there were a couple of the reasons to look at it. And then the block size itself, the land size of the property, was roughly about 750 square meter from memory.
Oh, nice. Yep.
And when I did a drive around on the street, I saw there were a few houses which have been knocked down and new townhouses that were being put on it.
Okay, yep.
So basically, I spoke to the council in the area on the same day to see if there were anything stopping me from, if I, not that I was planning to knock the house, but if I was to, in the future, 10 years, 15 years time, look at doing something with it that would be visible.
Yep.
And it turned out, yep, the property can be subdivided. Even if I want to knock it down today, I can actually put four townhouses on it.
Nice.
So that became another interesting factor to consider the property pretty seriously. So the few things that were in the favor were, one is the land size was good. The property could be subdivided.
Yep.
And the best part, you can go up to minimum three townhouses, up to four max, you could put on it.
Okay.
And the property diagonally opposite to it, behind the street, already had four townhouses on it.
Okay.
So there was enough proof for the same size of land, right?
Yeah, okay. So near site's already done the same thing. Therefore, you're pretty comfortable after checking with council that obviously sometime down the track, assuming that the council rules doesn't change, then obviously at this point in time, it seems feasible as a townhouse site.
Spot on. And the other things that were in the favor, like I said before, is the rent yield on it was pretty good. So I was super happy with the yield that it was offering, which means that after all the expenses, which is your water rates, insurance, and the carbon rates and all, it was still holding positive or more or less neutrally again.
Yeah. No, that sounds like quite a good acquisition, definitely. You know, you factored in the near short term, obviously you don't have to do too much work to it. The work's already being done for you. The house can be rented as is. Is it rent around 350 a week?
So the rent is about, yeah, actually you're right. I think it's about 340, 350, somewhere around that.
Yeah. So that would be about 6%, right?
Yeah.
Based on what you said. What's the vacancy rate now? Do you know roughly?
I haven't checked lately, but my guess is it's still pretty much under control. It's well and truly under 3%, I think, 3.5%. Yeah, it's not bad, actually.
So that leads to the next question then. What brought you to Christie's Beach? Why not anywhere else in Adelaide?
So that's a good question. So I looked at a few places around in the Adelaide before finalizing this particular one. And this goes back to the whole strategy thing. What's your strategy, right? I had a few properties already in Victoria. Some of them were negative geared kind of thing.
Yep.
And I was trying to balance the portfolio where I didn't want to stop the purchase, but I also didn't want it to go too much out of the pocket. So I was after something that will give me the capital growth. But at the same time, I shouldn't have to shell too much money out of my pocket to just hold on to that property. When I looked at the inner areas of the Adelaide and the one or the closer to the CBD kind of thing, there was the rent yields were not that great. They were good compared to Victoria. They were good, but they were not so great. And then secondly, I was after something where a value can be added into the future.
Yes,
so
value add.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, value add. So with this one, the value add was basically if I knock the house or sell it to a developer kind of thing, situation, that was the value add to me. And thirdly, the other reason was that it's a growing area. There was a bit of infrastructure being built at the time. There was a extension of the freeway and all that stuff, which is basically looking at the basic fundamentals of what's going on in the area. That was the other reason, and it's not too far from the train station and the employment areas as such.
Yep.
So all of that was adding up pretty well for me to say, you know what, it's not going to be a bad property to hold on to as long as you don't have to put too much money out of the pocket. There's an X factor to it that it's subdividable. It's closer to the beach, which is another good thing, obviously.
Okay. So that's I think that's good. That's a good summary in terms of the things that you were looking at. But I guess just stepping back a little, when you were purchasing this property, how many did you had in Queensland?
So at that time, I had one in Queensland.
One in Queensland. Okay. And what made you stop at Queensland? Because I think a lot of listeners obviously were looking at Queensland for yield. And same thing with me at that time as well. When I bought a couple in Southeast Queensland corner, I also know that Adelaide, I was also looking at Adelaide as well. So I guess I was curious in terms of why you actually jumped from Queensland to Adelaide.
Yep. So the option was there to purchase another one in Queensland, and I was actually looking for one in Queensland. But at the same time, I was looking at some of the stats of the Adelaide market. Now, here's the interesting thing. Brisbane market, we keep saying, is going to perform this year, next year, year after. And it's sort of being stagnant for the last few years with the hope that, yes, it's going to outperform the other states. And we still are hoping that will actually happen. It's just there's a temporary pause or whatever it is, right? But the Adelaide market, the thing with the Adelaide market is if you looked at the real numbers or the stats, it is a very consistent performer. It goes up year on year by 3-4%.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do the average over the 10 years, it works out to be more or less the same compared to Melbourne, Sydney, and to some extent Brisbane, purely because it's not a boom-bust kind of city. It's a very slow, steady market, which grows year on year. You can see for the last 20 years, 30 years, the stats don't lie. It's been a very consistent performer. When I looked at the opportunity cost, I'm like, this one is a no-brainer, to me at least.
Yes.
So I'm going to go and sign the contract, and let's see what happens in 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, no, it's good. I guess a lot of listeners will be very curious to know your thinking process behind it, and that's why I asked the question, because certainly, yes, Adelaide's a bit like the sibling of Brisbane, always a bit of consistent performer, not the boom and bust type, doesn't go up and down like Sydney and Melbourne, but it does have solid, steady growth result over the last longer period of time. So, that was and I guess from your perspective as well, you were also looking at Queensland market as well as Adelaide market at the same time. Were I correct around that time?
Spot on. So, actually, the property that I purchased in Queensland was only a month before purchasing this one. So, I was very active in both the markets at that very minute or at that very time. It was just I was really keen on diversifying one into the Adelaide market as well, purely because of the stats. I just looked at the stats and said, it makes sense to me. I'm going to diversify into this market. It's going to be a slow and steady climb.
And also it will be a lot easier to hold given the rental return that you're able to achieve and a low purchase price that you enter, right? Because if you bought something, and this will be about 2 years ago, around the 2017 mark, you know, Sydney would still be around the peak period. Same thing with Melbourne as well. So you'll be looking at a gross rental return, if lucky, something similar. Not only that you had to fork out a lot more capital to be able to purchase it, but the gross rental return, what, you'd be looking around a 3-4% by any chance.
Yeah. I think if it was left there for the next 10 years, and hopefully not much work is required. And honestly, since I bought the property, I haven't spent any money on it, hardly any.
Yep.
So I think if given time, it will probably end up doing it will probably end up performing very similar to Sydney and Melbourne.
From percentage-wise growth, isn't it?
Percentage-wise.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, look, I think that's a great story. And I think the key points for our listeners.
One of the other main reasons is this really comes down to your personal situation and portfolio, right? As said, for me, it was important to find something that can sustain itself with still a potential of growth.
Yep.
For others, it might not be the best strategy. So that doesn't mean that Christie's Beach or Adelaide is the best market for everyone else. It was my personal situation.
Yeah, it just stacks up. So I think that's a really good point for our listeners as well, because you know some people get fixated to say the next one will have to be in Brisbane or the next one will have to be in Sydney and Melbourne, but actually, as you know, as experienced investors like us, you know, we would open our options in multiple locations. So, you know, in this case, you were certainly keeping your eyes on the Southeast Queensland market. At the same time, you were also expanding your horizon around the Adelaide market to say, which market can give me a better deal at the time? And, you know, and you will be happy to pull the trigger, essentially. Well,
exactly. If the numbers stack up in the spreadsheet, doesn't matter where it is, it's irrelevant, right? And it has got the future growth potential, it's fine. If that doesn't add up, then it's not the best strategy, obviously.
nice and forget with future potential to build four townhouses, up to four townhouses. So only 250 meters to beach, and you never know. Maybe one day we'll be doing this call and you say, hey, I'm actually at my Christie's beach and I'm just over my pergola watching over the sea view right now. Can you hear the sea breezes in the back end? You never know. Maybe one day we'll. So I reckon all in all, it's a great purchase story, and a lot of key things that our listeners can take away from it.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a perfect sell and forget. Normally with the properties, you have to do something, maintenance, work, whatever, or if the tenants leave, then you have to start again the process. But this is perfect sell and forget example where money comes in, money goes out, and it's just handling itself.
Collecting rent. Awesome. All right, changing gear a little bit. Aliens. Or not.
You got me on this one. You had this plan, didn't you?
Come on, we gotta put you in the spot as well.
Definitely a believer. I think if the thing that everyone calls God. that to me is alien sitting somewhere in the outer space, and I'm more and more convinced that we are actually in a simulation.
Okay, that's interesting. I don't know how you can prove it though. What made you think that way?
I don't know. Play GTA a few times, it will just naturally come to you. Play more and more games on the Xbox. When it's in the real world, it's kind of headed that way. So
the conclusion is you play too much video games. That's All right, so you're a believer alien. All right. What's the next one? AI, would it take over humanity?
Just on the aliens, I don't think we'll be able to find them in our lifetime, but I think there's life somewhere else, definitely in some galaxy somewhere in the space.
And is that because you think that our technology at the moment is not advanced enough for us to be able to do interstellar travels, to be able to find, to be able to locate them?
Correct. So the way I look at this is when I was studying in school, there were only, 9 planets, I think. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Jupiter, Mars, Pluto, Saturn. But now the number of planets are just countless. And the number of galaxies, there's billions and billions of galaxies out there. So the space is just huge. And I think the technology, as the technology gets more and more advanced, we'll eventually end up finding some form of life somewhere, I guess. And the life will become multiverse, maybe in another few centuries.
Right. Okay. That's good. Might be when your kids grow up, maybe at that generation, they may be able to meet some unique life forms outside this universe. You never know.
Yeah. I do want to travel to space before I die.
Good. We're looking forward to the day that you share your space travel stories with us.
We'll do a podcast.
Excellent. So AI, would that take over humanity? What do you reckon?
Will it take over humanity? Probably not, but the form of humans will change to some extent. Like humans will become much more smarter and intelligent by using the technology itself. Okay. So it will be more embedded into the humans itself. Yeah, so we humans will get to the point where we'll actually have chips inside us, whether it's in our brain or whether it's in our arm or wherever it is, right? And it will be all AI controlled. So I think the form of humans will change. That will be more of evolution, not a revolution. And that will, whether you want to call that AI taking over humanity, I don't know, but the form of humans will change to be much more intelligent by using some of these technologies inside, embedded in them.
So you're saying basically the chips will become part of our life? Supplement.
Exactly. So it will sort of be a mashup of computer and a human to some extent.
Right.
We already pretty much living a digital life to some extent. I mean, we cannot live without our phone. We are spending most of the time in our phone. If our phone gets hacked, the hacker can pretty much find any information about us, right? So
yeah, that's the scary part at the same time.
So to some extent, the phones are already an extension of the human, right?
But I guess, do you actually reckon that at some point in time, AI is going to form their own unique personality and realize what humans are trying to get them to do, but instead they may potentially take over? Like what we currently see maybe in Terminators and that kind of stuff.
I think that will, well, it won't be Terminator style. That's a good movie. but I think computers will take over a lot of stuff to some extent. The point is that you don't even need to use the calculator these days because the calculator is sitting in your smartphone, right? So if that was somehow implanted in your brain where it could do that fast calculation like the phone does or the computer does, so there's that mashup that will happen, which will be a AI human kind of thing. Now, whether you can say that AI has taken over humans or the technology has sort of merged into humans, it's just a way of looking at it, essentially. Over the super long run, there is a possibility that AI can be a total threat to humanity, but that's over a very long run.
Okay. Yeah. Crypto, here to stay or fad?
All right, hey, this is the interesting one. All right, so Roger Montgomery came on the show. He reckons blockchain is a great technology, but the current form of cryptocurrencies, you know, none of them are going to really last, right? We had Martin North on the show the other day. He said the same thing, more or less, right? We had someone else, which I can't remember, and they were along the similar lines too. Here's my take on this one. I think people will be surprised what happens in the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
Give it 3 years max. The current currencies out there, digital currencies, whether it's Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, MakerDAO, whatever it is, there won't be one of them. It's not going to be winner takes all. There will be a combination of few, maybe Bitcoin, Ethereum, EOS, whatever it is. Different. Yep. I'm just naming randomly, but the point is there will be a combination of few that will surprise everyone of how fast this world is changing actually.
In what aspect, what are you envisaging? How cryptocurrency is going to change our life or embed into our life?
So there's a couple of things that will happen, right? One is one of them is going to end up becoming more of a form of a digital gold.
Digital currency?
Specifically digital gold.
Digital gold, okay.
So the why does, if you ask yourself a question, why does gold has any value? It's a piece of stone. We don't even know how much supply of it's there down in the earth and how much is stored currently in different vaults around the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But somehow we are able to figure out what the value of the gold is, and the market cap of gold currently is $8
trillion.
Now here's the thing I'll say, right? One of these currencies, one of them, digital currencies, is going to beat or match the value of the gold, which is $8 trillion market cap.
Right.
And I think that will happen in the next 5 years.
Big predictions, mate.
One of these currencies is going to be competing with the market cap of the gold, and it won't stop there.
Okay.
It will continue from there, right? And one of these currencies is going to form the new internet of blockchain, or the internet of money, internet of value, whatever you want to call it, which will be more like a platform on which all the decentralized apps run. So currently everything is controlled by a central bank in different countries, right?
Yes.
So Australia has got the Reserve Bank of Australia, Fed in US, you've got Fed in India, you've got RBI, blah, 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 right? Central banks. Can you tell me how much Australian dollars were printed today, or how many are in circulation today? Is there any way you can look at that and find out an accurate answer to that? And same goes for gold as well, right?
No idea.
No idea, right? So this is where, would you trust humans or politicians that are sitting in a central head office manipulating the data every day, which no one even can look at? Or will you trust an algorithm that's running on a machine which is totally decentralized across the world and can verify every single transaction that's happened on that ledger? And you know what the supply of that currency itself is. Which one would you trust? I mean, forget all the noise. Just apply the common sense for a second. Which one would you trust more? Algorithm that's running the machine?
I know where you're coming from. Yeah, definitely. Because algorithms, because machine, I mean, people will make errors, right? Human mistake will make errors, and therefore, you know, you would probably put more trust into the algorithms, which is, we know they'll get executed in a very solid way.
And not only that, you can actually go back and audit that algorithm. Anybody, person like you trace. And I, who's, exactly, who, you can go back and trace. Person like you and I, who's nobody, can actually go and trace, right? Or will you trust a central party, which is the Reserve Bank of Australia, Reserve Bank of India, whatever country it is, right? And the politicians all are surrounding, all around it. If it's a public blockchain, can be audited, can be traced all the way from the start to the end.
Yes.
Right? From the day the very first transaction happened to the transaction that happened last on it, right?
Yep.
Anybody can go and audit that. And the best part is it's not controlled by one person. It's totally decentralized, right?
Yes. That's the whole idea, decentralized.
Decentralization is the whole idea. Whereas on the other hand, you've got a central bank, a central authority sitting, manipulating rates on a daily basis. You don't know whether the rates are going to go up or down. You don't know how much currency is going to get printed today or tomorrow. You don't know how much money is in circulation today, how much money is moving into Australia, out of Australia. None of that. There is no way. Even the politicians themselves, Reserve Bank itself doesn't know any of that information. They will have some information, but not all this information, right? Mm. I'd rather go and trust a machine, an algorithm that's running on the machine, which you know is going to execute based on a proof of work, and you can go and verify the transaction that it's happened, over a central party which always have got some sort of personal benefit associated to them themselves, like politicians. They'll play the game just because they want to be in the power, right? So they'll control, they'll manipulate the currency, they'll manipulate the rates purely because they want to be in the power. Whereas on the other hand, one thing is purely decentralized and independent. So which one will you trust the more? So sure, long story short, basically, yes, in next 5 to 7 years, there will be at least one that will compete the value of the gold in terms of the market cap. And there will be some good decentralized financial apps that will come out over the next few years, which will challenge the current traditional system.
Yep. Okay. No, it's so good. No, I think it's an interesting view, that's for sure. And I'm sure our listeners would benefit from being able to see from this perspective. You know, some probably will agree, some may disagree. Again, it's all just perspectives.
Everyone we had on the show had pretty much said that none of the existings will stay.
Mm.
I'll challenge that state.
Well, let's see in a couple of years' time then. I reckon 5 to 7 years, we'll see. We'll basically pull out that new digital gold and then at that time, I'll ask you, Jazz, how much have you hold?
Yeah, that's the interesting one, isn't it? But here's one. I've got one for you now. Do you think humans will be able to retain their biological self? Will be able to download our brains into computer and pass it to another body or machine, whatever it is?
Might not be in our life generation, but in the future, possibly.
Mm.
Possibly. I mean, there's, you know, as I mentioned a number of times, the Black Mirror series actually have one of the episodes that talks about this. Human brains were actually stored as part of, like, in the microcomputer form, digitized basically already. And essentially you would run under like a simulation, like what you explained before, like a simulation where you actually felt like everything is so real, but the reality is your brain is stored within a server, and everything is simulated on that basis, and you can choose just to relive the best part of your memory over and over to a degree without the actual physical form. So in that sense, then, you know, what you mentioned, you know, is our brain actually going to be able to retain the biological form? Maybe not in the future. We don't know. I mean, it's a possibility, but, you know, it's and the Black Mirror series meant to kind of like go and overextend just to warn people to say this could be what's happening in the future if you abuse technology to a degree. But certainly I think depending on how again, how people will use it. So it all comes down to how people use technology.
This is where it gets interesting. So back to the AI thing that we were discussing before, right? If we can somehow store our brain into computers, right, and restore it back into someone else's brain or machine,
yes, right,
and relive some of the moments or recall some of the important memories. Let's say I'm a Albert Einstein, right? And my brain, if I was able to store it into a computer, and that can be replayed at any time to find out some of the useful information, that kind of already is AI and humanity meshed up.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Right? Yeah, I do agree. Yes.
Yeah, whether we'll be able to see it in our lifetime, possibility, but it will surely happen in future. So, yeah. Interesting world we are living in, right?